Section 46, Masterpieces of Negro Eloquence, edited by Alice Dunbar Nelson. This LibriVox recording is in the public domain. A Few Remarks on Making a Life by Robert E. Jones, Doctor of Laws, editor, Southwestern Christian Advocate, New Orleans, Louisiana. I have a story to relate, and at once I want to present to you my hero, a hero more inspiring than Achilles of the Iliad, or Odysseus of the Odyssey, or Aeneas of the Aeneid. My hero is not a myth, not a creation of literature, not a tradition, but not unlike the Grecian hero, in that he sprung from the union of a god and a mortal. My hero is not reckoned among the high and mighty, nor will his name ever be carved on stone or raised on bronze. Neither has my hero accomplished startling feats. As a hero, he may be a paradox, inconspicuous, humble in station, modest, hid far away from the maddening, jealous, curious, bickering, taunting, striving, restless crowd of life. Too long already I have held him from you. His name I do not know. His birthplace I do not know. His age I do not know. Is he living now? Here my ignorance is painful. I do not know. My hero, however, is an actual man of flesh and blood. I met him but twice in life, but was so charmed I did not ask his name. His personality thrilled, and he, in a measure, has become my patron saint. He is not a hero of large and commanding stature, but a cripple, doubly so. His arms were palsied and turned in so that he could not use a crutch. His lower limbs turned in also. He sat in an ordinary cane-bottomed chair and could easily move himself about by throwing the weight of his body from one back leg of the chair to the other, lifting the front legs at the same time. I saw him along the train side at Spartanburg, South Carolina. A beggar? No, my young friends, beggars are seldom heroes. He was a merchant prince. He carried his goods around his neck and shoulders and in his outer coat pockets. He was selling shoestrings and pencils. If you gave him a dime, he would insist on your taking one or both of the articles he had for sale. In his activities, he was a fine lesson of the first requirement of life. He was self-sustaining. By the sweat of his brow, he earned his bread. Did he complain of his lot? Not a bit of it. His handicap he did not make, nor could undo. He therefore accepted his condition philosophically. He was self-respecting. He knew his limitations. He knew what he could do and what he could not do. He was self-knowing, knowing his handicap and that it was quite unlike any other man's, and that he needed a means of locomotion. He found it. He had therefore initiative. He leaned not upon the strength of others, but used his own resources. He was therefore self-reliant. He did not wait for business to come to him. He put himself in the path of business. He was a hustler. He saw life through a cheerful lens and kept a stout heart. He was optimistic. He recognized his own personality apart from the personalities of the crowded throng through which he passed. He was a self-contented individual. He had but one life to live, and he was making the most of life. When I left him, I crowned him, honored him, and I love him for his worth as a true man. I like a man who faces what he must, with step triumphant and a heart of cheer, who fights the daily battles without fear, nor loses faith in man, but does his best, nor ever murmurs at his humble lot, but with a smile and words of hope gives zest to every toiler. He alone is great, who by a life heroic conquers fate. When once away from my hero, as I thought of him in my deepest soul, I cried, "Thou art my chastiser, my inspirator. Thou art simple, yet great. Untaught thyself, thou art the teacher of all. Henceforth thou shalt be my hero and guide, doubting myself, bemoaning my limitations, depressed by my failure, ashamed of my achievements. My seeing you has given me a new interpretation of life. I own you, my friend, my life's inspiration and hero." There is my hero. You ask his color. What difference does it make? Men have often refused to recognize worth because of color, but to satisfy you, I will tell you. He is a Negro. Give a seat of honor to my hero. Gather inspiration and learn from him the lessons of life, if you will. Here is an individual doubly afflicted, without a word of complaint or a fret or whine, depending upon his own initiative and resources, making the most of life under the circumstances which surround him. Upon the basis of what has been said in closing this address to the graduating class of 1913 of the Tuskegee Normal and Industrial Institute, I desire to offer a personal word. In the first place, you will know, a year from now, more than you can realize at this present moment, that this is a commencement. This is not the climax of your life. It is but the beginning. And however paradoxical it may seem, you are not at the top of the ladder. You are at the foot. We are here to applaud you today, not so much in what you have already accomplished as to give you a send-off for the strenuous tasks that lie before you. To be frank with you, young men and young women, the life in earnest that awaits you without will tax every bit of your strength. Your moral strength will be drawn upon, as well as your intellectual resources. Secondly, had I my way, I would have each of you burn your diploma and never refer to it as an indication of what you are and what you know. Do not attempt to pass through the world on your diploma or your class standing. The world cares little for these. I would urge that you prove to the world what you are by what you can do, that you let your achievements point to your diploma. Thirdly, you go forth today as a representative of this institution, mantled with all the sacred honors, prestige, and commendation that this institution, state, and your admirers can bestow. See to it that you keep the honors of this hour unsoiled, and that you disgrace not the noble history of your alma mater. Fourthly, I do not believe that this institution is fostered with the idea that the few students who gather here from time to time only shall be reached. I rather suspect that the dollars that come from the state and generous friends come with the hope that as you have been helped and lifted to culture and refinement, you in turn will carry culture to those who may never be permitted to stay in these walls. You are to carry light into dark places, and unto those who sit in darkness, by your arm of strength, you are to lift the poor who are beneath you, and then your education comes not for self-culture, not for self-enjoyment, not for self-use, but for the betterment of those who are about you. Fifthly, you go forth as the embodiment of a new generation. You stand today upon the foundation built by those who have gone before you. They have wrought well. By their toil and suffering, you are blessed. You are to carry your generation one notch higher, and thus help the onward march of the world's progress. Be thou faithful, lift your eyes heavenward, and aspire to do the best, and be the noblest according to God's heritage to you. There are no chosen depths, no prescribed heights to which you may climb. Honor and shame from no condition rise. Act well your part. There all the honor lies. Make the most of life. End of section 46.